Hello, this is Espen Anderson reading an essay called The S-Curves of Sinks and Technology, which was first published in ACM Ubiquity, Volume 6, Issue 19, June 8, 2005. You'll find links to this essay on my website, espen.com. The S-Curves of Sinks and Technology by Espen Anderson. Joe Spire was the father of a friend of mine and a great character. A chemistry professor at the University of Connecticut, he was reportedly famous for asking tricky questions of students wanting to take his class. One question, for instance, was, "What would happen if you took a large bucket of water and poured it into the toilet bowl?" For all their mathematical and scientific learning, many students had not figured out how a toilet worked. This was not because they couldn't understand it, it's not that hard, but because it never occurred to them to look into how a toilet works. Why is the water lever where it is? And indeed, why is there water in the toilet bowl in the first place? And how come the drain pipe has that funny S shape? And by the way, why is there an S under the sink as well? The reason I'm thinking about toilets at the moment is that a while ago I was teaching a class on basic strategic management. I'd asked the students as an assignment to analyze the market for inkjet printers. In this market, as anyone with a cheap printer knows, the HPs and Lexmarks of the world give away the printers and fleece you on the ink cartridges. The students were asked to investigate what options the inkjet manufacturers have in protecting this rather profitable racket. After all, it is color ink that keeps HP in the black, if you pardon the pun. When it came time to discuss the assignment in class, my first question was, "Now, how does an inkjet printer work?" It turned out that out of a class of about 130 students at a master level in business, only 3 to 4 had bothered to look into how inkjet technology works, and none of them had thought about what it was about the technology that enabled the company to follow such a strategy. After all, there are laser printers. They don't operate on the same business model. In that market, you pay a much higher price for the printer, and much less, at least per page printed, for the ink, or more precisely, for the powder. The answer lies in that inkjet printers, or at least most of them, spit heated ink onto paper through many tiny holes. Each hole is addressable and controlled by a tiny chip, which connects to the printer itself through a proprietary interface. There are no moving parts, and the holes are liable to clogging with increased use. The laser printer, on the other hand, has a rotating, light-sensitive drum in the printer itself, which picks up ink powder where a precisely directed laser beam has been shown on it, or more specifically, on the areas of the drum that are supposed to pick up the ink. The ink is then transferred to the paper, heated to make it sink into the paper fibers, and you have a printed page. And this is rather nicely explained at a website called howstuffworks.com. The upshot is that for inkjet printers, the printing technology itself is very cheap and can be put on the ink cartridge. That is not possible, or at least not economically viable, on a laser printer, since the light-sensitive drum is large, expensive, and has many moving parts. Consequently, a laser cartridge is really not much more than an ink container, whereas the inkjet cartridge, at least in principle, is the printer itself. The inkjet printhead is hard to copy. It lends itself to, in my view, mostly misguided, intellectual property protection and to endless product variation. Once constructed, it is very cheap to produce, and you can play the Gillette give away the razor and rake it in on the blades strategy. Or, for that matter, the sell the elevator and get your money the next 50 years on elevator maintenance game. Now, you might have many quibbles with both my description of the technology and my conclusions about its importance for business strategy analytics. There are inkjet cartridges where the chip is not on the cartridge, but in the printer, and there are experiments with throwaway light drums in lasers. The pricing model in the laser market may be an artifact of the more sophisticated demand of the customers. Laser printers tend to be bought by businesses who look more closely at operating costs than first investment. Or because the first laser printers were very expensive and the razor and blade model never took hold. But that's not my point. My point is that even for someone without knowledge of the inkjet market itself, it would be very easy to understand the underlying dynamics of the market if he or she understood how the technology worked. The attractive business model of the inkjet market is tufted on some rather precarious technological assumptions. One of them being that it is too hard to create a cheap and long-lasting printhead, sell the printer at a decent rather than subsidized price, and start to compete on operating costs. After all, color lasers are now down at $500, and various courts around the world are eyeing the hook 'em now, fleece 'em later inkjet strategy with critical eyes. Anyway, leave that be. Why had nobody, none of my students, even asked themselves the question, how does a printer work anyway? I was surprised enough that I asked the students how many of them knew why the drain pipe under the sink has an S-curve in it. About 10 out of 130 students dared raise their hands, and some of them thought it was because this was a convenient trap for small and valuable lost items, such as jewelry. Less than 3% of the students knew the real reason why there is a curve. I naturally assume that you, worthy listener, knows this, but just in case. The curve in the drain pipe is there to block the smell of sewage from wafting back into the room. The water trapped in the curved part of the pipe blocks air passage, and that water is continually refreshed every time we run water in the sink or flush the toilet. If you want to appreciate the importance of this feature, try scooping out the water from the toilet bowl, or, like I did, go on a 3-week summer holiday, enough time to let the water in the toilet bowl evaporate. Anyway, during a break in the lecture, I went for a coffee, and I mentioned the incident to a colleague. He said he once had taught a marketing class where the problem discussed was how hard it was to sell microwave ovens when the technology was new. Consumers were reluctant to use microwave ovens because they thought the rays could harm them. The students snickered at this, so we asked them, well, how does a microwave work? None of the students knew. Of course, again, I assume you, worthy listener, knows. If not, the short explanation is that a microwave works by sending electromagnetic microwaves into food. The waves, by changing the magnetic polarization, excites the water and fat molecules in the food, essentially shaking them very fast. And heat is, by definition, moving molecules. The microwaves do not escape the microwave oven because it's lined with metal, this is called a Faraday cage, and because there is a switch that turns off the power when you open the door. Well, nobody can understand how all technology works, but it always surprises me how so many people can walk through life in delightful ignorance, not only unaware of why their cars move forward or why there's sound on the radio, but not even curious about it. It's not hard to find out how things work. Gone are the days of complex wiring diagrams and hopeless mathematical formulae. You can find excellent explanations, helpful graphics, and even animation schemes describing how many common technologies work on the web, in books, or actually just by trying to figure it out yourself. But no. People want to press a button and just have it done. And therein lies the problem. If you don't know how things work, you don't know what's hard. So you invest in things like natural language systems. Now, speech recognition has been a promising technology for 30 years. Or systems that can predict the stock market. Or you go out and spend a fortune on pyramid schemes and magnet therapy. And wander through life, mouth agape in doltish wonder, to quote Paul Fussell. Dorothy Parker said, The cure for boredom is curiosity. There is no cure for curiosity. The problem is that not enough people suffer from curiosity, but instead accept the world as it is, without wondering and eventually learning how it really works. That being said, my wife has a knitting machine, and I cannot for the life of me figure out how it operates.